Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
On this week's episode of White Wine Question Time.
I rang my dad to say, look, Dad, you know, I just want you to know, albeit I'm an adult, I'm in my 40s, but I just want you to know that even though I've been with my boyfriend for 18 years, you know, we've very sadly split up, I've met a woman, I've fallen in love, and I hope that that's okay. On a personal note, I'm still very torn about the fact that I haven't had a family. So this consumes many of my waking hours about, should I adopt, looking into adoption. No other journalist has ever made that connection and that association. And you're absolutely correct. The difference is, though...
The difference is a lot of body parts.
the difference is a lot of cock. A lot of cock.
It's a lot of cock. Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest this week is the daughter of an RE teacher and a vicar who grew up in a vicarage in Staffordshire to go on to become a writer, producer and a host of some of television's most talked about and controversial shows, steering us through super size versus super skinny, sex education, naked attraction and most recently, naked education. She's also the founder of a business called Mindbox, a 24-hour online mental health support centre, which she started after finding therapy to be a lifeline for her and has even gone on to qualify as a cognitive therapist. Much like her father's work as a village vicar, she tries to put herself at the heart of communities to advise, listen and learn, be it with the shows that she makes, the businesses she runs, or with her new podcast called It Can't Just Be Me, where she's playing both the host and agony aunt, trying to help those in need of support and a steer, all the while sharing some of her own experiences from what she calls her topsy-turvy life. So let's dial her up, shall we? It's Anna Richardson.
Hello!
There she is!
Can I just say, Kay, I sound amazing. Who is that
girl?
God, she sounds incredible, doesn't she?
She is kick-ass.
Wow, this is your life. What an intro. It doesn't feel like that in my real life, I have to say. That was a sort of star-spangled intro.
I think as a form of therapy, everybody should have an intro written for them. So on those days where you just don't feel great, somebody reads you your intro and you go, yeah.
That's a really good idea. That's a brilliant idea. It would, wouldn't it? It would just give you that little pick-you-up. that you just
need. Yeah, it would. It puts a little pep in your step. And you know what was interesting is I was researching you, because full transparency, you and I have known each other for decades, right? I didn't realise how close in style your career has become to your father's work, because you are much like a vicar. You've put yourself at the heart of the community. There's no discussion that you won't have. You're there to help, and no judgment.
I think that's a really... Do you know what? You are the only person ever, and this is, I'd say, how bright and insightful you are, genuinely. No other journalist has ever made that connection and that association. And you're absolutely correct. The difference is, though...
The difference is a lot of body parts.
Yeah, the difference is a lot of cock. A lot of cock.
It's a lot of cock.
The difference is actually with my dad's work and my mother's work and where I am now is that... when I was growing up, there was a lot of sort of shame within my childhood, and there were a lot of secrets. So there was a lot of, you don't say that, you don't talk about this. I mean, we're talking the 70s and the 80s. So yeah. Obviously, if you're brought up within the Church of England, you absolutely do not talk about homosexuality or affairs or, you know, anything like that. Yeah. So there was a lot of silence within my childhood. So yes, I've emulated my dad, because my dad is an amazing, inverted commas, broadcaster. But I am unafraid, probably because of my childhood, to tackle the unsayable and to say the unsayable, because I can't bear the idea of shame or being told that you can't do that, you can't say that. Well, why not? So, yeah, that probably has informed much of my career.
I think it really has. And that you know, that style that you've just, you know, that kind of, you know, refusal to not have a conversation because it's awkward has become your calling card, your professional calling card, because you can be relied upon to go in there and not flinch or giggle or titter or dismiss. You just keep, you plow on through, keeping to that narrative, so that all of those other distractions, eventually people tire of sniggering and tittering at whatever it is that you're presenting. And there you are at the end of it going, so what have we learned? And actually, you keep people with you, Anna. That's really hard.
Oh, listen, thank you so much. That's really, really kind of you to say so. That, you know, that means a great deal. Yeah, that means a lot. And thank you. I just wonder whether it's because, again, you know, my mother was a teacher. My dad was a vicar. My brother is a teacher. I was going to be a teacher if I hadn't sort of...
Yeah, you were, weren't you?
If I hadn't fallen into broadcasting, I was going to be an English teacher. So I think that it comes as second nature to want to have an adult conversation about things that matter. And again, I'm unafraid to say, you know, we need to talk about this, and we need to talk about it without shame. We need to talk about it without judgment. Yes, it can be really fucking funny sometimes, but let's just have an adult conversation.
Yeah, and you can fall apart laughing, but as long as you, you know, collect yourself and carry on.
Yeah, yeah. But also, I do wonder whether part of my passion about wanting to stand up and say the unsayable, or my insistence on being heard, if you like, and for other people to be heard, probably again comes from my childhood. I've had quite some tricky events in my life, some of which I've talked about publicly, some of which I haven't. But certainly, I mean, you know, I've talked openly about when I was a student, when I was 20, I had an ectopic pregnancy, and I didn't realise I was pregnant. And there was nobody to, it nearly killed me. And there was nobody to talk to in 1991 when it came to trauma and needing to talk about this thing that's nearly killed me. And mm-hmm. I'm a student, and I've been left at my hospital bed by my boyfriend, who's basically just run off. And, you know, a lot of trauma. So I guess maybe that informs my insistence on wanting to help and allowing people to have a voice to talk about this thing hurts. So why don't we find a solution? And, you know, the one thing I can give you is respect and a voice to be heard.
This is my first question for you. I'm gonna dive straight in, if that's all right. I'm gonna pop the cork on question one, because you really have never been afraid, especially at a time when people were, to tackle difficult conversations that, you know, quite often can be drowned out because people find them controversial. And yet, You just stay focused. You keep chugging on through. You stay on track. You rise above the noise. And then you try to keep to some kind of positive outcome, be it sex education, you're, you know, talking about your own circumstances, for example, with the ectopic pregnancy. You got your scar out recently on Naked Education to compare scars with other people that were being brave enough to show their differences. Or in talking about your own experiences of trauma and your difficulties with mental health. So I wondered what have been the most worthwhile, tricky topics you've navigated, both professionally and personally?
Well, actually, I will come back and talk about Naked Education in a second, talking about that scar that I showed on TV. But I guess to answer your question, frankly, that the trickiest topics probably would have been partly my own fertility, which I covered in the sex education show, which I did for Channel 4. I think revenge porn as well, that I did a documentary for Channel 4 a few years ago on revenge porn, which was fascinating. And also, actually, more recently, Naked Education has also, you know, brought up some really, really emotive topics, because we're talking to people about their journey with their body and how their body has changed. So I guess that really, and I didn't realise it would, but it's really resonated with me, because our bodies have changed from the day we're born until the day we die. You only have one, and it changes throughout your life, whether you become pregnant, whether you become a mum, whether you have cancer, you know, whether you lose a limb, whatever happens to you, your relationship changes with your body. And that can be very, very emotional.
Well, especially when we're all expected to conform to look a certain way.
Yeah.
It's like one way or no way, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
But those examples you've given there, you're never afraid to become part of the story in any of those shows that you've mentioned. And I love that you do that. You know, you talked about your fertility, sharing your inability to have children on television. The way that came about was, I mean, so awful, Anna.
Yeah, I know.
And I can't, you know, I commend you for allowing that footage to go out at a time when you'd just been told that you went in to have a fertility test as part of a show, thinking, well, you know, this is all going to be fine. And, you know, it's all just part of the script, only to find out that actually you can't conceive. And then you allowed that footage to be shared at a time when you were probably still coming to terms with it yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so much to say about this. If we just look at the events of that day, I mean, the irony of it all, that, you know, I was hosting a show called, you know, the Sex Education Show. My director at the time, who's a really good friend of mine, was pregnant, so very heavily pregnant. I had agreed to go and have fertility testing because I felt pretty cocky about the fact that, you know, I was still firing out eggs left, right and centre. I was having periods, you know, I was fertile. I was fecund as far as I was concerned. So I thought, this, I have no problem. I haven't got a problem with being tested, you know, for fertility. And when the result came back, it went to other people first within production rather than me. And, you know, it's very interesting. The whole thing was quite sort of traumatic. Mm-hmm. And I think that I wasn't prepared for the shock of it. However, the point being, I think, as you've just touched on, I still agreed to have those results broadcast, because I thought, look, if I'm going through this horror story, then there's a million other people going through this as well. And I'm absolutely prepared to talk about that and be one of many, many other women that have found themselves in this situation. And I think for me, that's the point of being a presenter, is people will often say to me, you're exactly the same in real life as you are on screen. Well, yeah, because I'm just a human being like everybody else that happens to have a job on telly, that's all. Everybody else instead, when it comes to Naked Education, has gone absolutely batshit over the strand within the show where Dr. Alex George and Yinka Bikini are teaching teenagers about the human body using naked life models. Okay, everybody has just gone bananas about that.
But do you think the people that have gone bananas about it are those that have read about it, as opposed to those who've sat down and actually watched it? Because I watched it and I thought it was wonderful. And I'm the mother of a child of that age. And I thought it was so healthy. And those teenagers gave me great hope in their responses and their reactions. And the fact that they sort of checked themselves and went, we have been conditioned to think a certain way. And it's the wrong way. We've been conditioned to think that penises are 8 inches, that boobs are, the best boobs are the ones that look like they've been, you know, implanted in a woman's body. Pubic hair is distasteful because we don't see it in porn.
Is that natural? Actually,
these were smart young people that were able to draw their own considered and intelligent responses. I think we underestimate young people sometimes terribly. And I thought, actually, I sat down to watch one episode and I watched three and I thought it was beautifully handled by all of you.
Thank you so much, Kate. Thank you. Because I know that Channel 4 and the production team will be delighted to hear that as well, because we made that show with love and our absolute best intentions. The intention is and was to educate and inform. And there are some really, really emotional stories in that series. Hugely emotional. This has been really meaningful for all of the contributors that took part, and all of them have come back to the team to say thank you so much, because, you know, it was really important for us to be able to connect and to be able to share in the way that we did. There's no shame attached for us. So I think you're right that a lot of the people that have become hysterical about the show haven't watched it. But there are also some people who have and are still very, very angry. Now, I've got a theory about this, because interestingly, when I did the sex education show a generation ago, so we're talking sort of 12, 15 years ago, which was me going around secondary schools, teaching teenagers about sex and the body, using live naked models, nobody batted an eyelid. It was all kind of like, yeah, you know, schools need this. 15 years later, we've got hysteria.
Why do you think that is then?
I think that as a culture, as a society at the moment, I think we are so angry and we have become so polarised because of Brexit, because of the cost of living crisis, post-pandemic, that we've got this sort of binary thing going on in our culture at the moment, which is you're in or you're out, you're with me or you're against me.
It's very black and white, isn't it? And actually, we should try to live, I think, in a grey area where you're open to learning and changing your mind.
Well, absolutely. I mean, happiness actually is the middle way, and is being able to hold two opinions at the same time.
Or being able to be friends with people that have a differing opinion to you, and that being okay. Everything's become very tribal. But I think that's because life is dictated by a series of algorithms that are decided for us by AI, as opposed to somebody having a considered conversation with somebody and saying, do you know what, I don't agree with you, but okay, it was interesting to hear that.
Absolutely. Or I didn't think I agreed with you. I held a very firm belief about this. But do you know what, having listened to you or watched this, you've changed my opinion. I didn't realise that. And, you know, thank you. It's given me something to think about. So there's none of that. There's a sort of extremity within our society at the moment, and abuse. So our production team, myself, Yinka, Alex, have all received online abuse. I have never had that before in my life.
Seriously, because of Naked Education?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we've been called paedophiles. We've been, you know, there's been calls for our arrest. I mean, I've never experienced such extreme abuse, really, in the whole 30 years that I've been broadcasting and working in television. It's extraordinary.
That is extraordinary, because I don't know how people have arrived at that sort of level of emotion, having watched the programme that I watched, because it didn't do that for me. If anything, I'm still learning. Alex George is pointing out that 90% of a male body is covered in hair. I didn't know that.
And did you know, I mean, I'm going to be, because I was on a WhatsApp group with a load of friends the other day going, fuck me, did you know that your anus is part of your vulva?
No.
I know. I had no idea. And I was on a WhatsApp group with friends who were watching the show the other day going, oh my God, never knew that your bum was part of your vulva. Who knew?
So the bog off, buy one, get one free.
Exactly.
But also, as the mother of a young teenage boy, I really want everybody in class to be taught that the average penis size for a man in the UK, flaccid, is 3 inches. erect 5.5 inches. Because I think that for us, all the hang-ups that we have, and we're very good at talking about them with women, about the comparisons and body dysmorphia and all of that, it's very prevalent in young males. And just that alone, you know, I hate the idea that a young generation are being raised thinking that sex is porn and porn is sex. The two should not be confused. But I do worry that we are bleaching young minds into thinking that something that is abnormal is normal, and that they therefore have to aspire to that. So I really loved the show, Anna, and I'm sorry that you've received abuse. And I think that's incredibly unjust, because if people sat down to watch it, I think they would find it absolutely an education, beautifully handled. And if you are hysterical about it, we live in an age of about 85,000 channels. Watch something else.
I know. It's. But thank you for those lovely words. You're right. If it's not for you, that's cool. Stream something else.
Exactly. But you know what? If you have got a curious mind, stick around, because trust me, 50 years of age, I've learned something.
Every day's a school day, Kate. Come on.
Every day's a school day, Kate. What about some of the other tricky conversations that you've had to navigate? I know that, you know, that's something that you're going to be celebrating almost in the new podcast. And you've been doing shout outs, asking people to get in touch with their own stories, their own dilemmas. And you are absolutely the sort of person that I would come to for advice. You are something of a village sage, I would say.
I love that. I love the idea that we're now going into that queen age, aren't we? Now that we're in our sort of late 40s, early 50s.
If only I could remember stuff. That's
exactly. I would be the village sage if I could actually remember a bloody thing.
If my HRT was only reaching parts my brain cells can no longer discover. Yeah, exactly. What about some of the problems that, I mean, you're offering yourself up in the shout outs that you're doing on your Insta stories, saying, look, get in touch, for example, about coming out in later life.
Yes.
I this is something I've experienced. But what are your experiences? There you are again. Put yourself at the heart of the story, which I love.
Well, I'm interested. I mean, at the end of the day, you and I are journalists, and journalists are nosy, and we want the story. We want to be part of the story. We're interested in other people, and long may that reign. I find other people and their stories absolutely fascinating. And within that, we find connection. We're human beings at the end of the day. But yeah, in It Can't Just Be Me, my podcast series, it's an advice podcast, basically. And I'm saying to everybody, get in touch. It doesn't matter what you want to talk about. If you've got a problem, talk to us. I qualified as a cognitive hypnotherapist. We have a psychotherapist that's also in the hot seat, and we invite in celebrities who may have also been through something similar, but who can certainly give advice on the topic, to come into the studio, and we can work this out together. So it's a bit of a confessional, really. But yeah, I mean, some of the difficult topics, talking about coming out in later life, because of course that's something that happened to me.
That's right. I would imagine, I mean, certainly because your dad's a man of the cloth.
Yeah.
I think people would imagine that he would have been quite uptight, but that was quite the opposite, actually. He was not at all, was he?
My dad, I have to say, was amazing. He was amazing. And I can remember when I met Sue Perkins, my ex-partner, now very, very good friend, I rang my dad to say, look, Dad, you know, I just want you to know, albeit I'm an adult, I'm in my 40s, but I just want you to know that even though I've been with my boyfriend for 18 years, you know, we very sadly split up, I've met a woman, I've fallen in love, and I hope that's okay. And my dad was amazing, because his response, and Sue was with me at the time, but his response was, darling, you know, it really doesn't matter. As long as you're happy, all I care about as a parent is as long as you are happy. And if she makes you happy and you make her happy, then you have my blessing.
But also, you've said that, you know, as much as your house was always a very open house, by virtue of the fact that your dad's a vicar, it has to be. But your mum and dad, whilst being big on community, weren't terribly emotionally open around you.
It was the 70s, and we didn't talk about that much. And certainly my parents didn't talk about personal things. They were too busy as well, actually, then. And at the age of 10, I was shipped off to an all-girls boarding school. So for me, it's very, very important to be able to share and to connect and to not have any shame attached to anything, which is why, again, I've said, you know, I sort of insist on having a voice and giving other people a voice. Mm-hmm. It's important to me. It's really important to me. And also, my parents ultimately didn't have a very happy marriage.
So shortly after, yeah, no, they split. Shortly after I was sent to school, my parents split when I was 10. So, you know, I think maybe, again, you know, growing up in a household that was very, perhaps quietly unhappy.
Yeah. Kids pick up on that.
Of course. Of course we do. But this is the point, is that even though I'm now 52, when I go home and I see my mum and dad, who still live close to each other, by the way, and who are still quite connected, albeit their marriage fell apart, you know, you revert back, you take on that child role.
You revert
back to being a kid. So it's always difficult to have those conversations, isn't it, with our parents that
it is
might
it
be
is.
Personal but, and awkward.
Yeah, you're right. You do revert back to being, well, you're seeking approval, aren't you?
Always. And we do that throughout our lives, whether it's with our mum and dad, whether it's with our friends, whether it's at work, we are, or whether it's online. We are always seeking approval because, I mean, certainly what I've learned in therapy and in hypnotherapy is that all of our problems come down to basically one of three things. They were pretty much all formed in childhood, and it will come down to, I am not good enough, I am not loved, I do not deserve. And that comes from, you know, that comes from our childhood.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
So when it comes to advice, I want to know, who are your agony aunts and uncles that you go to, the people that you turn to because you value their opinion above all others, especially when you're stuck for what to do?
That's a really good question, actually. I think I've got a hierarchy of people. Okay, and bear with me on this. And again, it sort of reflects maybe my childhood and my background. So if I really needed to talk to somebody about what was going on in my life, the first person I'd call is my little brother, Ben. He is A, hilarious, B, is very, very wise, far wiser than I am, far, far cleverer than I am, far more learned than I am. And he's actually, his job at the moment is a social prescriber. So he works within a GP surgery. And when people come in who are perhaps actually, it's not that they're unwell, they're just lonely, or they're bereaved, or they might be depressed. My little brother is able to point them to various workshops or, you know, endeavours within the community that might actually give them more purpose and meaning.
What a lovely
support.
Job to have.
I know, isn't it a brilliant job?
It's like being the conductor of a happy orchestra.
Exactly.
Go and sing with them over there. They'll help you.
I will tell him that. But yeah, my little brother in a way is, yeah, the conductor of happiness. So I will speak to him and say, look, Ben, you know, this is going on in my life. I don't know what to do. And he's so wise. He's brilliant. If I'm bored of my little brother, then I'd probably move on to my therapist if it was a really, really serious problem. I'd move on to my therapist, who I've had for at least 20 years. She's known me on and off and been through various, you know, highs and lows in my life with me. So I would go and speak to her. And she's always been there for me. And when I need her, holds her hand out and says, okay, take my hand. I'll walk you through this and let's get through this together, which is wonderful to have her in my life.
20 years with the same therapist.
Yeah, I mean, I need to make it clear that hasn't been 20 years of therapy.
No, you go back to her. But how wonderful that you found somebody that you connected with, because I'm a huge believer in therapy, and it always makes my heart sink when somebody tries therapy for the first time and they don't connect with the therapist, and then they just go, therapy's not for me. I'm like, no, that therapist wasn't for you.
Absolutely.
It's like dating. That's a bit like going, sex isn't for me because I had a crap one-night stand. You've got to keep going. You've got to find the connection. Sounds like you really did. That's valuable.
That's a really good point. I mean, what we've learned is that in terms of therapy and the success of therapy, 90% of it is the rapport that you have with your therapist. So, you know, you're absolutely right to say that it's crucial to find the person that you vibe with, that you've got that rapport with, because then that person can help you to help yourself. It's the bond between you. It's the connection.
You've got somebody that's going to see you at your most vulnerable and help you.
Actually, it was while I was filming Super Size Super Skinny that I came across an amazing hypnotherapist called Marissa Peer. And I had a session with her while I was doing this diet show, which was Super Size Super Skinny.
Which, in which case, again, you became the story, right? You had to do...
I had to try a different diet every week for 8 weeks to see which ones worked. And of course, you know, no crush diet works. It was things like, you know, have the apple only diet, or then it was a sort of chili pepper diet. Ludicrous. But as part of this, there was one week where I was sent to go and see Marissa, because Marissa claimed that, you know, I can help you lose weight through hypnosis. And I remember standing outside her house with the crew on the street going, this is bullshit. See you in a couple of hours. Came out a couple of hours later, absolutely extraordinary, having been under hypnosis, having seen very, very clearly the point at which I started to have a problem with food, and it was 4 years old, something I'd never thought about before, obviously. And off the back of that one session with Marissa, I lost 2.5 stone. It was incredible. And I went on to co-write a book with her as well. I massively believe, like you, in, you know, how does the mind work? How can I harness this power? Actually, I need to get the knowledge myself so that I can understand and help myself in future and help other people.
I think that's the journalist in us. Like when somebody shows you a magic formula, my first reaction is always to sort of want to lift the bonnet on it and have a good rummage around to see how that works.
Yeah.
And I think it was the same for me with therapy. And the irony is that, you know, talking therapy is the key to success is listening.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And exactly. And it goes back as well to, you know, you and I do podcast series, and certainly the one that I'm doing right now, you know, it can't just be me, which is an advice podcast. People will always say, what's the best bit of advice you've heard? Or what's the best bit of advice that, you know, you can give? And actually, sometimes with advice, it's just listening. That person just wants to be heard. So we're coming full circle back to what we talked about at the very beginning of the show, which is everybody has a voice, everybody wants to use it, or they should be allowed to use it. And some people are being told they're not allowed to use it. So in some cases, it's just that people want to be heard. You don't necessarily have to dish out your fix it. It's just, I've heard you.
And it's interesting to me that you've got, I mean, like 20 years with the same therapist. I mean, that has to be probably one of the most successful relationships you've ever held down. It certainly qualifies mine.
I know, right? God, I've not thought about that. You're right. God, she's the person I've known, had a relationship with for the longest. You're absolutely right. And yes.
Charlie was what, 18 years?
Yeah, so I was with Charles for 18 years. Yeah, Sue for about 8 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've known my therapist through all of that.
I always tell my agent, you're my most successful relationship. 23 years he's been driving Miss Daisy.
Oh, good lad.
Exactly. But so you've got your brother, you've got your therapist.
Yes.
Who else is in your cabinet of wisdom?
So moving up my hierarchy of advisors, I would then probably go to my teacher who taught me hypnotherapy. So Trevor Sylvester is his name, and he runs the Quest Institute, and is one of the most extraordinary teachers, actually, and therapists I've ever met. So
I don't think I've met anybody with the wealth of knowledge that Trevor has.
Wow.
So I think that if I was really stuck on something, I would have moved up the ladder past my therapist to Trevor to talk to him about how can I now help myself with this particular issue. And then at the very top of my ladder of advisors, if I was really stuck or looking for a much bigger picture, I would then go and speak to my shaman.
Your shaman?
Yes, indeed. So
who is your shaman? Pray tell.
Got a wonderful, wonderful shaman called Anna Hunt, who actually, this would tick your box. She's an ex-journalist, but she is now a shaman and has a book out called, I think it was The Shaman in Stilettos. But she's, yeah, so she's
great.
She's amazing. So
she's like your Yoda.
She's my Yoda. So she trained in South America somewhere, you know, left journalism and said, this is a fool's game, and got more into the whole sort of spiritual journey. Trained in South America, and she now is a, you know, fully shamanic shaman and energy healer, basically. So I would go and see Anna and talk about how can I shift the energy around this particular situation? How can I shift my mindset, my energy, mm-hmm. in order to shift what is going on with this particular crisis that I'm having? And if needs be, I might then also do a San Pedro trip to try and speak to my ancestral guides to talk about what do I need to do. So I can, listen, I can go full on from talking to my little brother all the way up to chatting to the angels if needs be. I'll use anyone.
You've got a stairway to heaven.
I literally have got a stairway to heaven. Oh yeah.
Because I mean, and how brilliant to have so many people that you know you can go to. You've collected very well and very wisely.
I think that everybody needs to have, and this is what I say to people that talk to me in terms of issues that they're having, or if they want advice, or, you know, certainly from a hypnotherapeutic point of view, is everybody should have their own little toolkit around them. This is what we should all learn. We should be learning it in school. You know, you have the answer inside you. We all have the solution. It's just the ability to be able to access that and know what to do.
You're totally right. And sometimes it might just be as simple as learning how to breathe your way through something.
Yeah.
Or what I started to say in my perimenopausal kind of fog was, I'm going to worry about this in an hour. And then I genuinely am leaning on all of the shortfalls of perimenopause, because, of course, I won't remember it in an hour.
Oh, I love that. If it's worth worrying about, then I'll worry about it in an hour.
About it in an hour.
Yeah.
Between now and then, I'm just going to park it. And then guaranteed within an hour, you're onto something else.
Can I just say, and that's my attitude towards verrucas and warts. I think they're attention seekers. So if you just ignore them, you'll notice. And you've got a son. You will notice.
And you know what? They do eventually go away on their own. And most of the stuff that you buy to treat them does nothing.
Because you're giving them attention. The more you try and treat them, the more they're like, amazing, I'm now going to multiply. But the minute you ignore your verruca, just like your worried thought, eventually they fuck off.
Full stop on that one. Thank you. My third and final question for you now. You said that you wish you'd been better prepared for perimenopause. And I really couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
But I wonder, what else in life do you wish that we were better prepared for? The stuff that we could easily prepare for if we just new to educate ourselves?
Death.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, maybe I'm picking back up on my childhood and you know, where I came from. But obviously I was surrounded by being brought up in a vicarage. Our house was built on a graveyard as well. Yeah. So, you know, I was surrounded by that. But we don't talk about it. And we're particularly bad in this country at dealing with grief and with the end of our life. So I wish that as a culture and a society, we were better prepared for talking about it.
Yeah.
And accepting that death is part of life. And that accepting, I hope, that maybe it's something not to be scared of. I mean, personally, I'm very frightened about it. So, and yet my dad
who, you know, he's getting on now. He's not a well man. He has vascular dementia. Mm. But when I talked to my dad about, you know, come on, Dad, what do you reckon happens when you die? My father is absolutely clear when he says, well, I know where I'm going and I'm going to the company of angels. And I'm cool with that. He absolutely is unafraid. So, you know, I'm very envious of people who feel very comfortable with it.
And that's, I think, faith, isn't it?
Yeah, that's faith. That is faith.
And it's interesting. I think, you know, when my son comes home from school now and he does, they don't call it RE anymore, as your mum would have taught it. It's theology and philosophy or something.
Okay.
But he comes home and it's broadened his mind. I was never taught it's all about any other religion apart from Christianity, to be honest with you. Maybe a bit of Catholicism, but, you know, we didn't understand about any other cultures, any other religions or faiths. And yet, it's such a shame because there's massive learnings in them. I mean, you can choose to take nothing from them. But I think culturally, when we step outside of the Christian faith, the way they deal with death, celebrate death.
Yes.
Remember the dead. We could learn an awful lot from that because we are quite buttoned up when it comes to popping our clogs.
Well, I guess we're still very Victorian, aren't we, in the UK? With that idea of sort of hearses and horses and coffins and, you know, whatever, and a very high church, if you're Church of England or Catholic, very high church sort of ceremonies. When actually, where is the celebration? Where's the party of this person's life? Where's that idea that maybe, you know, you live with the dead? You know, you don't just forget about them. I don't know. I just think that we should be doing it. We should be doing it better. We should be doing it better.
It's interesting. I had Prulith on the show recently.
Oh, yes.
She talks about, you know, her determination to find a dignity in dying and having a say in when, as and when you would like to go. And obviously, 83 is probably something that's far more of a burning issue for her than it is for you or I, let's hope.
Yeah. Let's hope, absolutely. But then at the same time, I think at our age, you know, when you're menopausal as well, you're looking at the second half of your life. Mm. And that includes, obviously, ageing. So you do start to pause, don't you, at this age and go, how do I want my life to be in its second half? And how can I do it well?
You know, like literally you do it. I mean, I've just turned 50 and you just realise that there's more road behind you than there is in front of you. Just that's the maths, right? And you're like, that gives you a newfound sense of respect for time.
Yes.
Like perimenopause has stripped me of my ability to read. And much, I can't assume that I'm going to be able to see much in the years to come if I keep deteriorating at this rate.
You and I are both wearing specs. Are you onto the reading specs then?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for anybody listening, you know, who's below 50, believe me, I had 20/20 vision. One day you wake up, and you can't see. No, it's just a fact of life, but it's boring.
I used to be able to read the name of a lipstick on the bottom of a tube.
Yes.
That would feel like I'd won a gold in an Olympic something now.
Absolutely.
If I could do that. That's a magical power that I no longer possess.
Yeah, that's a memory.
And I wish that I had been better. The thing is, you and I, right, we were both pretty well prepared for menopause because we talk about it, it's part of our job, we're journalists. You know, it wasn't like, you know, we've been, I don't know, locked away in a job that hadn't exposed us to this in any way, shape or form. And yet it still came as a horrific surprise to me. And I just wish that... I wish that the seeds had been planted almost at school, that you teach, you know, a class of teenagers that women bleed and they start their periods. Well, what about when they stop? I didn't even know what perimenopause was and I was in it.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right that, you know, with the sort of woeful sex education that we've had and to an extent still have, you know, you learn about, you know, childhood and then you have your periods and then you might have a baby and then your periods stop and then you die. And that's all you really know.
But they didn't even tell me about the period stopping thing. I was never taught that at school.
Well, we were told, weren't we? I mean, it was sort of alluded to that, you know, your mother's going through the change. And there was always that, wasn't there? Sort of grey.
But it was whispered. I mean, my poor mum, I think back now, how... my mother's generation dealt with it. My mum had a terrible early menopause, and I remember it really well. And I just really wish now that I had a time machine so I could take her back and just douse her in estrogen and lessen her suffering.
Well, and that goes for generations of women before, doesn't it, when you think about it? I mean, we are incredibly fortunate that we now have a wealth of HRT, should we want it and need it.
Unless there's a shortage.
Unless there's a shortage, probably because I've got it all. But when you think about our mothers and our grandparents, that wasn't available to them, or certainly not in the kind of variety that we have now. But, you know, it is... I know it's to be celebrated. In fact, funnily enough, I attended a conference on Saturday that was about the menopause with an amazing therapist called Pat Duckworth, who's a bit of a specialist in it. And she was saying that we ought to change the narrative a little bit around menopause, that all we hear is the misery stories in the media, when actually there's a great deal to celebrate around it. And it did sort of, as we were saying earlier on about trying to hold two different thoughts, two different opinions in both your hands. On the one hand, I think menopause is fucking awful. I've had a horrible, horrible menopause. But at the same time, I respect what Pat is saying, which is we also should celebrate it because it can be wonderful. It opens the door to the second half of our life where we're free and we don't care to a greater or lesser degree, and that we can achieve incredible things.
Yeah, I think as long as you've got control of your mind and your body, then I agree with that. But when you wake up and you feel like, you know, one of 15 personalities is inhabiting you at any given time, and your body hurts and aches or it's inflamed, all of those things, once you get through that, I saw something you'd done, which I wanted to find all of the answers. And rather than just talking to other women who were going through this, I want to speak to women who are at the other end.
Yes.
And that's, I tell you what was extraordinary, is because it feels so absorbing and consuming is the word, at the moment for me, and I'm sure for you with where you're at with it. But when you go and speak to women in their mid to late 60s, they go, oh, God,
I remember that.
It's like, it's a footnote. Yeah. Whereas some days it can feel like the end of you. And as much as I find great comfort in wallowing around in the menopausal mud with all my sort of menopausal women, like a bunch of hippos, you know, looking to cool off somewhere.
Yeah.
I really need to see those witty, sassy older women that just go, oh, it's brilliant over here on the other side of it.
You're right that we are the elders of the village, and actually, you know, we're full of wisdom and life's experience, and we're having a wonderful time.
It will all be well. All will be well. In terms of what you do next, I mean, what is on the agenda? What is on your menu for life? Because you've done so much and so well with it.
Do you know, I mean, this is something I'm pondering, and you and I talked off mic a little bit about this. It's something that I'm really thinking about in terms of, you know, what are the things I want to carry on doing. I love broadcasting, so I want to carry on doing that for as long as I can. And I'm a journalist by heart, so I want to carry on connecting with people for as long as I can. On a personal note, I'm still very torn about the fact that I haven't had a family. Mm-hmm. So this consumes many of my waking hours about should I adopt, looking into adoption, and what it means to be a mother and to be a parent. So that consumes me at the moment because I'm very...
And where are you with that? I know you've made inroads in terms of looking at what the possibilities are, but
I've made some inroads into it. I mean, look, the fact is, in the UK, adoption is a lengthy and complicated process.
Hugely.
And it should be, I
rightly
guess.
As well, yes.
Rightly, because you're placing very unnurtured children, and some children with a great deal of damage, with prospective parents, and you have to make sure that those parents fit the bill, basically. So I understand why it's very, very lengthy. So I'm at the very beginning of that journey, and just wondering about my own capabilities, really, and.
that life change, if that makes sense, from being a non-parent to potentially a parent of an adopted child. I'm interested in international adoption as well. So there's lots of things going on in my head around, is it time for me to be a parent? And what does that look like? So that's what's going on.
Oh, I mean, it's the most exciting, thrilling, wonderful, difficult, demanding, awesome thing I ever did. I think you'd love it. And I think any child placed in your care would thrive.
Oh, bless you.
I really think.
This is the point, Kate, is it's wonderful to hear you say that, because I guess I don't want to get to the end of my life and think, what if, you know, I should have and that I never did.
So, yeah, I mean, I think if it consumes you in the way that it sounds like it does, then there is a longing there. There is a calling. I mean, I sit here now as, you know, with my son and my experiences as a mum, I'm almost grieving my years as the parent of a young child that needed me and climbed on my lap and, you know, wanted cuddles at bedtime, all of that stuff. Because when I look back, when you talk about that deathbed moment, those are the moments that I value above all others. There's no stage in the world that will ever hold a light to those magical moments. So, and that's just, but that's just me. I mean, I am now the sort of woman that whose ovaries weep when I see a buggy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I need to pull myself together whilst encouraging him to, don't leave it too long. I'd love to be a grandmother.
Oh, God, how wonderful. But I think that this is it. You know, we all, I guess most of us inherently have a need to nurture, don't we? That, you know, as humans, we're tribal and we are about society and connection. So, yeah. And family. So you know, there's a need for connection and nurture.
Equally, I have friends that say, I might try and have a baby. I mean, I don't really feel the need or the want for one, but, you know, time is ticking. You know, I think it is life-changing, right? If it's not something that you feel compelled to do, then don't. Because it will turn your head on its, you know, your life on its head. But in ways that I think have been hugely educating for me as well. I've learned so much from my son and from being his mum.
That's the thing, you learn so much about yourself, and ultimately, you know, the fact that you are nurturing this little person, you're building a child, aren't you? And encouraging them to be a good human being. I mean,
it's like at these years now, you start to see a return, not return on your investment, but it's almost like I can see all the stuff that's been poured into him is now coming back out. I see the way he represents himself, he holds himself, you know, he can be very impressive.
No, this is it. You've built a little boy. So that's what
but,
goes on
but
my head.
But there's nothing to say that you couldn't too, and that you wouldn't find it hugely rewarding. It's never without challenge, but you love a challenge.
That's true. I do love a challenge. You heard it here first with Kate Thornton. I love that. You love a challenge.
I love a challenge. I'm really looking forward to coming on and trying to mine my own mind for some wisdom to help on your podcast. And I think, you know, I just can't believe you haven't thought of doing this before, because you are the village sage, Anna. But you were that, you know, in a pair of high heels and a bright pink bra strap back in the 90s when I first met you. I just remember you had the amazing coloured underwear under your vest tops and stuff. You always had quite the sass. It's about time that other people got to benefit from some of that learned experience.
Oh, well, listen, I can't wait to have you on the show as well. And thank you so much for having me on here again. I love this. I love the show. We've got so much to talk about. And I think when the mic is off, I'll see you in the pub.
Damn right you will. God, could I have sounded more excited?
I know.
And if any of the conversations that we've had on this podcast have piqued an interest in you to better understand yourself, you can always pop your dilemmas over to Anna on It Can't Just Be Me. You can also try her brilliant 24-hour mental health hub. It's called Mindbox, and there's all manner of services available there for people that maybe just want to take the first step on the ladder of understanding what it is to get a little bit of help to help yourself. A huge thanks to Anna. Don't forget, you can also listen to her podcast, It Can't Just Be Me, wherever you get your podcasts. And for more conversations wrapped in wisdom, you can find episodes with Anna's co-host on Naked Education, Dr. Alex George, in our back catalogue, as well as newsreader-turned-therapist Kate Silverton, life coach and TV and radio presenter Nikki Chapman, and former Loose woman Andrea McLean, who's also left a career in TV to pursue her work as a professional coach. Oh, and good news, we've started dropping a brand new mini midweek episode every Tuesday featuring some of the very best bits from some of our very best guests. It's called Something from the Cellar, and it brings up vintage cuts served to your feed every Tuesday afternoon. So to make sure you don't ever miss an episode, please ensure that you're following the show or subscribing. Thanks so much for listening. I'll see you Friday.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.